JT, live in Vegas.
Football season is finally here.
Number one, I love football.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the Raiders.
We go balls out with the Raiders.
Just win, baby.
My father used to say that the greatness of the Raiders is in its future.
I'm all in.
We go balls out with the Raiders.
Dominate, commitment to excellence.
There is unfinished business.
The best and most elite Raiders insiders right here exclusively on this show.
Oh, yeah.
Just win, baby.
Here I am, and I'm ready to get to work.
And now, live from Las Vegas, here's JT the Brick.
Great to have you today, JT, on a busy, busy night. Sports Radio's most interactive show, and we're based right here out of Fox Sports Radio. The Lotus Studios, brought to you by Golden Entertainment, PT's, and the great Happy Hour. From 5 to 7, midnight to 2, we just met with them to talk about what they're doing during fantasy football, and we invite you to join us, fantasy football with PT's, with their draft kit, every drink special, food special, everything that they have going on throughout the valley at their 55-plus locations. When you think fantasy football, please think of PT's and what they're doing there. Big show lined up. Vinny Bonsignor will join us at 20 minutes. He's the Rams insider. I often refer to him as the Vegas godfather of relocation. He's the only guy that knew the Raiders were coming when the Raiders were getting bad press that the deal was blowing up and they weren't coming. He was the guy who reported, don't worry about it. They have a bank. They have the money. They'll be here. Don't worry about it. That's Vinny. He joins us at 20 after. Joe Lisi, the great college football insider, at the bottom of the hour at Go for the Two. Seth Everett, my baseball buddy, the MLB insider, now with Forbes. And Mark Schlereth, Mike Pereira, the NFL rules, former rules officiating head from Fox, will join us at 6 o'clock. And Bill Platsky, you see him from around the horn in the LA Times, he joins us in the 6:30 hour. A lot I want to get to today. I'll be in Los Angeles this weekend, Raiders' second preseason game. They go up against the Rams. Very unique game in the preseason because typically you don't play a team opening week on Monday Night Football that you just played in the preseason. So what does that mean? Sean McVay, the head coach of the Rams, his mentor is John Gruden. John Gruden gave him his first job in Tampa Bay. John Gruden knows McVay inside and out. He's a mini Gruden, and they know each other well. So I look for a very vanilla game. If you're looking to bet that game, remember the last game with the Raiders in the preseason, how it went well under the total. What are you thinking about in this game? I think it'll be a vanilla game. The good news today out of camp, there were two big stories up in Napa. Donald Penn returned to practice at right tackle. The three-time Pro Bowler at left tackle moved today to right tackle as Colton Miller, the first-round draft pick, 15th overall, played left tackle. What does that mean? I don't know. Penn took a pay cut to stay, which I think is commendable. He took a pay cut, and he's going to do what Gruden asked him to do. If you look at the Raiders on opening night, knock wood, without injuries, they'll have four players at Pro Bowl ability up front. Donald Penn, multiple Pro Bowls. Kelechi Osemele, multiple Pro Bowls. Rodney Hudson, the center, multiple Pro Bowls. Gabe Jackson, considered one of the best guards, period, in the league. One of the best young players on the offensive line in all of football. And then the 15th pick overall. I don't know what else you want with the Raider Nation than that. That's your offensive line. Behind them, Derek Carr, who should play at an MVP level this year. And we give you Martavis Bryant at wide receiver with Jordy Nelson and Amari Cooper. That's good to me. I don't know how you can get better. You really can. I could debate that's better than the Patriots, other than Tom Brady, but Carr's younger and fresher and ready to go. So the Raider offense needs to get going quickly because with Khalil Mack on the sidelines holding out, I'm assuming he's going to come back with a new contract or the ability to play out his rookie contract and get franchise tagged for years to come. The Raiders have the best player on defense. I just told you the starting offense, which is loaded, absolutely loaded. And my theory is this team's got to score 30 points a game. You got to put up 30 every game, not 24. Not 21. You got to put up 30 a game and hope for a Garyon Connolly interception, a Derek Johnson strip fumble, a Khalil Mack strip sack, and the young players up front on the D-line. I like the way the Raiders are performing. If they can get healthy and come out of Napa healthy with arrested Marshawn Lynch and a tough schedule. The Raiders open up at home on Monday night against the Rams, then at Denver. That's not easy. Those are two games that can go either way. If the Raiders get out of that 1-1, I think most Raider fans will take it. So we'll get into that. If you have anything any day you want to add with the Raiders from the stadium, what's happening here in Vegas, or with the team up in camp, don't wait for 40 minutes. Dial now at 876-1340. The breaking news story today is Maryland accepting responsibility in the death of one of their players, Jordan McNair. And they parted with their strength and conditioning coach. Their president at Maryland, Wallace D. Lowe, explained that he met with the parents of the dead football player, Jordan McNair, to apologize for the university letting the football player down. This was very emotional today. Offensive lineman Jordan McNair died from heat stroke at the age of 19 at a Division I football program, the University of Maryland. At the time, he had a 106-degree temperature. They did not put him in an ice bath, and they did not take his temperature before they sent him to the hospital. According to the family attorney of the deceased player, McNair, with a 106 body degree temperature, was admitted to Washington Hospital on May 29th, and no one from the university called 911 until an hour after he suffered a seizure at 5 p.m. While Maryland maintains that no student-athlete, trainer, or coach has reported at 5 p.m. the seizure, through the external review, Evans says McNair did not receive appropriate medical care and mistakes were made at the athletic training personnel at that level in the program. McNair died 2 weeks later off the coma on June 13th. So I want to address this story, as I have two kids playing high school football. You might have kids playing, your sons might have played, or you're connected to UNLV, or you're connected up at Reno. Football is under siege today. It is under siege with the league and the anthem and the problems that we see at the level of the NFL with CTE and what's happening with brain injuries. At the college and high school level now, Maryland, if you lift up the curtain, had an atmosphere of bullying and excessive pushing of athletes, which to me has been common in the modern history of football. Football players are some of the most aggressive people you've ever met. Football coaches push football players to get the most out of them. You cannot get the most out of a football player by not making him run. You cannot get the most out of a football player if the football player doesn't watch his diet and nutrition. You can't get the most out of a football player if you are not verbally communicating with that football player and pushing them past their ability to be a player. But now the problem becomes bullying and caring for football players when they are going through adverse times at practice and throughout a game. So let's talk about the game. When the game's on television or it's played in front of a stadium and 100,000 people are there, if a player gets a concussion, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, the player would come out, they'd give him some smelling salt, he'd go back in the game. Now, everybody sees that the player's out, he goes under concussion protocol, and he has to be cleared to go back and play. That is a positive to how we've come about as a football society. But we don't know what's going on in practice. They film practice, they watch practice, but typically you're not going to see the athletic director pulling a player off the field because he's having a tough day. The parents of the football player in high school and college typically are not coming down from the stands and can look at their son in the eye with a helmet on and see if he's under distress. These players are in the hands of coaches, and coaches have to be trained medically. They have to be trained to the best of their ability to understand duress at all times. And Maryland failed this young man who ended up passing away at the age of 19. So the big picture that comes out of this for college football, as it starts 2 weeks from now, is college football has a major black eye heading into their season. Now fans will forget at a tailgate, and they'll throw a couple of red Solo Cup beers back, and their fans will get ready to support their alma mater. I get that. But the problem is television, Twitter, Facebook, the world that I live in sports talk radio, is pounding football around the clock. I want to know from some of the parents out there who are considering letting their kids play football, is this negative media attention affecting your decision with your child eventually playing football? I just talked to one of my friends in the building before I came in here who said the same thing. He's got a four-year-old son, told me he will never play football. I said, never? He goes, yeah, never. I've seen enough. I understand how violent this game is and the damage it could do long term. I'm not going to sit down and have a deep dive on why maybe his kid, when he's 11, might want to make friends and play Pop Warner football. Could be the best thing that ever happened to him in his life. But the issue becomes the drip-down effect of negative media attention all the time and the sport of football clearly being hampered with its future growth because of all these negative headlines with brain disease, concussions, and now stories like this coming out of the University of Maryland. Look, I tell everybody this all the time. You're going to have to make the decision with your own kid. You're the parent. You make the decision. The kid doesn't make the decision. A nine-year-old kid should not be able to make a decision on playing football. He should want to play and ask mom and dad, can I please play? And then the mom and dad got to sit down and make that decision. It's a much easier decision for parents today to say no than it's ever been. Ever been. And my wife and I consciously make the decision, it's good for our kids to play. Friendships, camaraderie, what they're doing, the focus, the coaches, learning life lessons. But not sure, not positive. And then my job in the NFL and what I see, and I'm watching players in practice, every play on the field is a car accident. Boom, boom, boom. Practice and during the game. And I'm talking to former players, and I've said this on the show, I'm talking to former players now that I've known for 20 years who have to do a second look when they talk to me to remember who I am. Sideline during the game, won't mention the name. This past weekend in Oakland, one of the Raider legends walked right up to him, gave him a hug, and it took him a second to figure out who I was. That's the risk and the reward of being an iconic player, getting a Division I scholarship, putting money in the bank, and making a career playing football. You put your body and your brain on the line. And most football players that I've interviewed throughout my career say they would do it again. They would do it again. There are not many of them that walk away from the game saying that they made a mistake. They might have made a mistake later on in life, but they don't regret the glory of playing football. The sport is under siege, ladies and gentlemen. What is going to happen to football going forward with all these negative stories? 876-1340. I'm under siege on my Facebook page. Facebook at JT the Brick. I put up a rant last night about Barry Bonds. And all of a sudden, I have to now go on my Facebook page and delete profanity and people coming at me personally. All I said is that Barry Bonds is not worthy of Cooperstown in the Baseball Hall of Fame. I believe that Barry Bonds is one of the greatest players of all time. He deserves to have his number retired. With the San Francisco Giants, he entertained those fans in baseball throughout the course of his career. The problem with Barry Bonds is he was never Willie Mays. He was never in that category. He was a great player with Pittsburgh and a great player when he came to San Francisco. But Barry Bonds was not Henry Aaron. He was not Babe Ruth, and he was not Willie Mays. My side of the debate is simply this. Barry Bonds, who knowingly took performance-enhancing drugs, lied about it, also did it in front of his godfather, Willie Mays, and went from a 450, 500 home run guy to a 750-plus home run guy, broke the ultimate penalty. He went from being great to superhuman. That's exactly what performance-enhancing drugs do to athletes. They take great athletes who are really good and they make them iconic unless they get caught. Now, are there players who might have took performance-enhancing drugs that didn't get caught? Yeah, Jeff Bagwell, Mike Piazza. I've had people call me about Ricky Henderson and going back in the day. But many of those players were not connected to a performance-enhancing drug dealer. They weren't connected to a company like Balco. They didn't have a clubhouse attendant who ratted them out for performance-enhancing drugs. That's the issue. That's the eyeball test. I don't know anybody, even the diehard Giant fans who love Barry Bonds, that have ever looked me in the eye and said, JT, he never cheated. They all know he cheated, but I can't look at those fans and be mad at them because they were entertained by Barry Bonds. They bought a ticket. They went to the game. Bonds put the ball in the water. It brought him joy and happiness. You can't take those memories away. But what I try to do is remove those voices from the conversation and get more into a baseball conversation about the difference between Cooperstown and the Hall of Fame and having your number retired. Now, Pete Rose isn't getting in because of gambling. Really big deal. I don't know of a bigger champion in this town for Pete getting in the Hall of Fame than me. Love to see it happen, but Pete put himself in that situation. And the good news for Barry Bonds is many of the reporters are aging out. So a lot of the voters are getting up there in their 60s, 70s. So they're going to be out. And some of the younger voters coming in are going to forget the transgressions of Barry Bonds. They weren't in the clubhouse. They didn't see how he treated the media. They didn't understand when he was kind of in a roid rage, upset with people, because they weren't there. So those will be the guys who vote for Barry. And then maybe Barry will get into the Hall of Fame. But I'm pretty consistent. Even though Roger Clemens cleared his name in federal court, I believe that the top five players, or at least four players, in the history of baseball that shouldn't get into the Hall of Fame are Barry Bonds, Alex Rodriguez, Roger Clemens, Sammy Sosa, and Mark McGwire. My list is rock solid. That's the list. Those are the five guys you got to keep out. I'm not looking to take their money. I'm not taking their mansions and houses away. I'm not taking their pensions away from them. But there's got to be a penalty phase for knowingly cheating. If Mark McGwire is going to break Roger Maris's single-season home run record, roid it up, and admits to it, good. He broke the record. We're not going to take the record away, but we can keep him out of the Hall of Fame. So if you believe and you're a purist or you're someone who wants to change with the times, I'm all for the one solution, which I think is the right one. Put them all in. Just make sure on the plaque there's an asterisk. I love asterisks. What's wrong with asterisks, right? What's wrong with that? Pete Rose, you put him in and you have a big asterisk. He gambled on the game. As a manager, by the way, not a player, as a manager, and you put it on the plaque. You do the same thing with Bonds and those guys, but you don't forget it. You don't say, okay, it's been 20 years. Let's spin it a different way and let you in. 876-1340, Mike, you're on Fox Sports Radio. What's happening?
Hey, JT, how are you? Great
Good.
Show.
Thank you.
I'm the father of a 9-year-old boy. He's played four seasons of flag football. If you tried some other thing, he loves it. Done a ton for himself, confidence, and stuff for his weight, made him healthy, feel good. But now he's getting the point, Dad, when can I play tackle? What can I play tackle? So we're going through that whole thing, just like you said you do with your boys. And so we're just looking at everything. But the problem that comes into play is because of social media, even at age 9, is he hear these stories like Marilyn today. And now we have to factor that in and educate him. So it's not just as simple as is it dangerous for him, but figuring all the things that they're exposed to at that age as well.
Yeah, so. I think a big issue is when they're kids and they're really young that you put them in tackle football and they learn how to tackle properly, and if they have good coaches, it'll be fine. It really takes a special player to be good enough to play at the high school level, at a high level, or let alone get a Division I scholarship and play, let alone go to the NFL. So a lot of people are going to let their kids play high school football, and that's it. And I think it's worth the risk by letting him play Pop Warner, you know, middle school football, let him play high school. And then you have a really big decision if your kid turns out to be a unique athlete and he can play at the next level. That's when you got a big decision to make.
Yeah, we're just prepping along the way. And like I said, it's just good for him now. And we're just making it good. And we'll teach him all on the way. And if he gets the talent, if he gets blessed, then great. But we're not going to give up on it because I think, like you say, they teach him the right way. He'll be good.
Thanks
I appreciate you letting me on the call.
Yeah, no problem. That's what we try to do here. I want to hear other people's opinions other than mine. Okay, I don't want to hear my opinions for 4 hours. I love to hear that. And it becomes a decision that parents make together. Together as a unit, if you're a single parent, you got to make a big decision on your kid playing football. It used to be a very easy decision. Go back to the 60s, 70s, and 80s. This was never a discussion. Never. Never a discussion once. Now it's a discussion where people have to make up their mind and make big decisions. Go see Frank at the Henderson Hyundai Superstore right on Boulder Highway in Henderson. Look at the deals. Look at all the inventory. Look at that gorgeous Vegas Golden Knight vehicle right out front. And understand that they're here for you, the Henderson Hyundai Superstore right there, Boulder Highway in Henderson. Vinny Bonsignor, as we preview and we'll preview the Monday night game. But the preseason game, the Raiders are at the Rams in L.A. at the Coliseum.
I didn't agree with that call at all, honestly. But that was a well-blocked play, and that's impressive. That guy was rolling, man. That was good to see. I was really ticked off, though, after that just called back. I just got to the stadium. I just called my fourth play.
Right. So you knew you were back the first time you were upset? That's
yeah.
You realized.
Yep, Chucky came out for a brief moment tonight. There.
Yeah, it's John Gruden. Chucky came out on the sidelines as Marshawn's touchdown got called back. JT with you. Vinny Bonsignore joins us from The Athletic, the Rams insider. As I often tell you, the godfather of Vegas NFL relocation. And Vinny, good to talk to you. And getting ready for this game coming up on Saturday, a day game in Los Angeles. And you know the Raiders really care about this. It's been a long time since the Raiders played a football game at the Coliseum, and they're proud of their history there.
Yeah, no question about it. It's going to be a special day. Unfortunately, it's going to be at 1 o'clock in the dead of summer, but there's a reason for that. The Coliseum is undergoing major renovations, and while it's ready to be played, to be used for a football game Saturday, in fact, I'm taking a tour of it tomorrow, they weren't quite sure if the lights were going to be ready, so they asked the Rams, hey, in these first two preseason games, can you start them at 1 o'clock? So this wasn't a Rams decision. They didn't want to put their fans through this, but unfortunately, due to circumstances, it has to start at 1. But it is the Raiders and the Rams. What better way to kind of kick off the new-look Coliseum than the two NFL teams that played there?
Rams had a tremendous year last year, disappointing that they lost in the playoffs at home. Do you feel covering this team every day that there's more pressure on them, or they're building and taking steps at a time? This is a long-term play, and everything's not on the line for 2018.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think people are misinterpreting some of the moves that they made during the offseason. Kind of thinking that it was a one-and-done type of a situation or got to do it here in 2018. It's anything but the case. If you look at the guys that they brought in, aside from Aqib Talib and Ndamukong Suh, you're looking at Brandon Cooks, who's, 25 years old, Marcus Peters, who's 25 years old. Both of those are foundation pieces that they want to go into the future with. They'll play it by ear with Suh and Talib after next year. But this is a young team outside of those, the two guys that they brought in at cornerback and defensive line. So they're looking at a long haul here, a big window with a young Jared Goff and obviously a young Sean McVay kind of in a tandem at quarterback and coach. So this is, like you said, more of a long play, much more of a long play than a short play.
Vinny Bonsignore is our guest. I'm sure you're asked about Aaron Donald as much as I'm asked about Khalil Mack. But what I find interesting here is with the Raiders and their lack of communication, or the agent Joel Siegel's lack of communication with the Raiders, Aaron Donald, it seems like from everything I'm hearing that the lines of communication are open, everyone's on the same page, they're getting very close, and if they end up doing a deal here soon, that will open up the door for the Raiders to have a number to go to Khalil Mack with.
Yeah, and if you look at it from Khalil Mack's perspective, I mean, he's sitting on $14 million this year, whereas Aaron is sitting on 6.9. That's the difference in their draft positions in the same exact draft. Mack was drafted in the top five. Aaron Donald at number 13. So the disparity in money is pretty large. Khalil has much more flexibility to wait this thing out, knowing, hey, whatever happens, I'm still going to make $14 million, in 2018. But if Aaron can sign first, now I have, like you said, a number to look at and say, hey, I'm every bit as good as Aaron Donald. That's what I want to make and get as close to that, if not top it, once Aaron signs. Now, getting back to Aaron, there's absolutely urgency. They are on the same page. There still is a disparity in the value of the contract. I think the Rams are more than willing to make Aaron the highest paid defensive player of all time, make him the first non-quarterback to make more than $20 million a year. But it looks like Aaron and his team want elite quarterback money, and that's a little bit too rich right now for the Rams, and rightfully so. In a salary cap situation, you can't wreck it by paying a non-quarterback, a defensive tackle, elite quarterback money, especially when you have an elite quarterback that's going to come up for a contract here pretty soon, Jared Goff. So, but I think they'll close it. They have to close it. I mean, what are Aaron Donald's options, really? I don't see him leaving $65, $70 million on the table just to you know, be deep in a position to kind of blow up his market at his position. I think he comes in. I think it'll happen sooner, right around the opening week of the season, and then Khalil Mack will have his number, his reference point, to go talk to the Raiders and say, that's kind of what we're talking about right here.
Vinny Bonson, yours our guest from The Athletic. What I find interesting is John Gruden made a comment that a lot of people picked up on, that they weren't very good with Khalil on defense, because they weren't. Khalil Mack is the best player, period, on the Raiders, offense or defense, and I think he plays at a very high level, but there are so many other things that the Raiders need help with in that secondary, the linebacker position. I don't hear that from Sean McVay. What is he like when you talk to him? What do you sense from McVay in regards to the importance of Aaron Donald, knowing that McVay is an offensive guy just like Gruden?
Yeah, and there is communication between Sean and Aaron, but I have to preface that. There's no negotiation. They do not talk numbers, and the Rams have strategically done that. Call it the good cop, bad cop, whatever you want to call it. But when Aaron and Sean talk, it's all about life and, you know, how you doing, that type of thing. The money situation is all the agent and the general manager. So they keep it at that level. And I would suspect that, I would think that John Gruden has at least made an attempt to reach out to Khalil Mack. But maybe Khalil doesn't want to, you know, it's hard for players to be in these positions because, it's above your head in some way. Yes, you have some say in the matter, but it's the numbers, all that complication stuff, is being done above you by people that you've hired to take care of that. So inserting yourself into that kind of a situation could get a little dicey. I think he's playing it safe. Mack is. And I think John Gruden is playing it safe. It'll get done somehow, some way, by the people that make things like that happen.
We'll do a deep dive before the Monday night game the next time we have you back, because it's such a critical game. The Raiders get a free Monday night game to kick off Chucky at home. And they get the Rams, who are going to be like every team, not playing a lot of their starters throughout the course of the year. The Rams have to play really well on the road to beat Oakland. But John Gruden's got to get so much work in with this team because they have so many players. So last question, Vinny, what are we going to see at the Coliseum on Saturday? These two coaches are very tight. They're not going to show their hands, especially with a Monday night game coming up in a few weeks.
Well, and they can. And I'll take it one step further. These two teams had talked about the possibility of practicing together this week prior to their preseason game. But it was all with the understanding that only if this game, if our regular season game, is played in the second half of the season. Lo and behold, the schedule comes out, and it's the first game of the season, and both coaches are like, no, we can't do this. That's crazy. And it makes it even crazier that they're playing this game on Saturday. So you're not going to, at least from the Rams' perspective, I'd be shocked if any of their starters played in this game or if they did anything that they'll even look at or even pretend to think about bringing into the game on Monday night. I think this is going to be a strictly vanilla game. But you're right. I think the Raiders, they may need to use this more because it is a first-year coach in John Gruden, and he has to make a lot of hard decisions. So maybe they play it a little bit differently. But I wouldn't suspect that they're going to do anything that you're going to see at all come Monday night in Oakland.
Congratulations on your move to The Athletic. It's a big one. Tell our listeners where they can find your content.
Yeah, absolutely. The Athletic, LA, The Athletic in general. It's a great deal. There's a deal going on right now. It works out to about $4, less than $4 a month for a year's subscription. There's a ton of great writers that they've hired across the country, nationally, locally, and it's here to stay. I think they've got a great business model, and it's something that I believe is the future. And they've tapped into it earlier than most, and I think that it's going to be, something great for the fans, really good content, day-to-day type stuff, big picture stuff. So The Athletic, and I can't urge anybody enough to go ahead and take advantage. It's not that expensive, and it's well worth the $4 per month.
Absolutely. I'll see you Saturday. Thank you, Vinny.
All right, man. Take care.
There he is, Vinny Bonson. You're really good. And that's going to be fun. We'll have him on here in a couple of weeks as I host the official Raiders podcast. And I have Rich Gannon scheduled, Vinny, and another Rams insider, and that's an important game. If the Raiders can beat the Rams to open up Monday Night Football in Oakland, they're off to the races. And if the Rams lose that game, that's a big loss for them because on paper they're a better team. They were a playoff team last year, and the Rams are supposed to be really legit. Joe Lisi joins us, GoForTheTwo.com, our college football insider. And what's going to happen with Maryland and the Ohio State? Drama surrounding both programs. How does it affect their win-loss total on the field. PT's happy hour right here at the top of the hour. Join me at the SG Bar. When there's ever a big sporting event, you'll find me at the bar at the SG.
I think the number one thing that you'll want to talk about is the quarterback controversy that you'd love to create, that you've already created, that you will continue to create. And I will tell you the same thing exists there. It's still to be determined as to who's going to play quarterback for Alabama. So you can ask all the questions about it, but it's still to be determined.
Chippy, Nick Saban, as always, JT back with you, brought to you by Golden Entertainment. Joe Lisi joins us every week, college football insider. Go for the two, gofortheTwo.com. Joe, your perspective on the fallout at Maryland. Unfortunately, a player died. That's the big picture. The follow-up is how it affects the program going forward this upcoming season with their schedule.
Yeah, unfortunate circumstances surrounding DJ Durkin and then the Terps. Whenever a player's lives are lost, JT, I mean, it affects the program. Not sure exactly what turns of whether he'll be there or not. I think I'll lean towards DJ Durkin not having a job with the Terps for the 2018 season. But I wasn't high on this team overall entering the upcoming year. I picked them at 4-8. I think from a physicality perspective on the offense and defensive lines, they're not where they need to be, especially with some of the better teams within the Big Ten. They struggled in run support defensively last year and did have an anemic offense, even though they had some quarterback struggles. But now with this circumstances surrounding the program, I think it's going to be a very difficult uphill battle for the team in the 2018 season.
Joe, you're connected with a lot of coaches. You go to practices. How does this affect the culture of college football at the coaching level with practices going forward and pushing these student athletes farther than they can go?
Yeah, we've seen it now in a couple of programs. We saw when Willie Taggart got to Oregon, there were some conditioning problems. A lot of players broke down in terms of those type of strength and conditioning tactics. And it really is the landscape and the culture of college football. I mean, the win now mentality puts a lot of pressure on coaches when they are getting million-dollar contracts to hit the ground running. And that forces assistant coaches as well and strength coaches to push these players past their limits. I mean, that's part of the game football in one mindset, but in the others, when players' bodies are breaking down, we're going to see it, I think, more and more as years progress.
Joe Lisi's our guest. Go for the two. Joe, I was following the Michigan story at quarterback. What's going on here? I mean, Jim Harbaugh's had a number of years now to figure this out. You got the Ole Miss transfer in Shea Patterson. Obviously, they have other players that they're looking at, the redshirt sophomore, Brandon Peters, Jeff George Jr. Remember, Jeff George was a great, not good, a great college quarterback. His son here, Dylan McCaffrey, who's a five-star prospect. Why is it taking so long for Jim Harbaugh to figure out who's going to be a signal caller?
Yeah, I don't think it's taken that long. I think he knows and the coaching staff knows, JT. I mean, the one thing about college football that's a little bit different than the NFL is that we hit the ground running, hitting on all cylinders week number one. From week number one through the end of the season, there is no margin for error. So why tip your hat on who the starter is to give opposing defenses and opposing teams to game plan, especially week number one when they face a solid Notre Dame team? I think it will be Shea Patterson. I love Jeff George back in the days in 1990 in Champaign, but I can tell you that his son at the collegiate level was a very inconsistent quarterback at Illinois, struggled within that offense. So I don't think he has a legitimate chance to pull out the starting job. I think it will go to Shea Patterson. He is a pro prospect, goes about 6'2", about 215, 220 pounds. He has great pocket presence and can make all the throws. And more importantly, always keeps his eyes down the field. He will lead Michigan to a Big Ten title this year.
Joe Lisi, gofortheTwo.com. We're bouncing around. Just big picture, because I know it, on UNLV and Tony Sanchez now having more of his players on that roster with an athletic quarterback who's got experience, and the fact that they do have more winnable games than they've had over the last couple of years. Are you bullish on UNLV heading into the season?
I am. I picked them at 7-5 overall. I think they break through this year. You mentioned the schedule, very manageable. And they have two offensive playmakers in Armani Rogers, the quarterback, and Lexington Thomas at the running back position. I think offensively they're going to be fine. Another year in the system will benefit Rogers in terms of his consistency as a pocket quarterback. I mean, he does have mobility, but he struggled with only about 53-54% completion percentage. But defensively is where I think they need to make strides this year to really win seven games. They allow 239 rushing yards to opposing offenses, but they have teams on their schedule where they can outscore them. So as long as the defense comes around and cuts it down to around 185 rushing yards per game, I think UNLV will be in the area of about at least 6-6, but possibly 7-5 for the 2018 season.
Joe, your preseason guide is unbelievable. Tell everybody, what are the biggest questions that you're asked when you go out on tour and you're traveling around the country and people are asking you questions, especially from a gaming perspective coming into the start of the year? Is it win totals? Is it the playoffs? What are some of the frequently asked questions you often get?
Yeah, it's mostly win totals and playoffs. And I can tell you this about, especially with previews. Previews are really non-existent past the first month of the season because we're accumulating more and more statistics and we have a read now on teams as they start the 2018 season. From the preview perspective, I really broke down every Power 5 team's strengths and weaknesses from the previous year to more importantly see and concentrate whether those trends continue week number 1, 2, and 3 of the season, because then you can get a gauge whether a team will have a successful season as they navigate through the first month and, more importantly, October and November. So that's what I concentrate on. It's very critical in week ones and number two of college football. So I feel like I have a great read of some of the best teams within the nation in the Power 5 conferences.
What do you got on the site this week? What's the content show us?
Well, I think we're going to concentrate mostly on week one matchups. I'll be out in Vegas next week. I'll be speaking at the Golden Nugget for a college football panel on Saturday, August 24th. And really, we kick off next week, and we have some solid games, Wyoming and New Mexico State. We also have Colorado State and Hawaii. And then we hit the ground running September 1st and August 31st with some great matchups, top 25 battles across the board.
You got it, Joe. I'll see you when you get out here. We'll get lunch. Thank you.
Can't wait, JT. Love the show.
Thank you. Joe Lisi joining us. We go from one really good guest to one of the elite baseball insiders out there, host of one of my favorite podcasts, Sports with Friends and Hall of Justice. And how about this? Now at Forbes. Check him out at Forbes.com. Here's Seth Everett. I am under siege because San Francisco fans are upset with me that I want to keep Bonds out of Cooperstown. Am I right or wrong?
I think the world is changing. If you're going to talk about the Hall of Fame, I didn't think this was going to be about the Hall of Fame. I thought it was going to be about the weekend. But if it's about the Hall of Fame, I'll say this. The voting process is antiquated. And until they fix the voting process, I don't want to hear about it. The Hall of Fame has an outdated thing. The media is changing.
Yes.
And everyone and their grandmother's trying to do electronic media. They're trying to do radio and television and podcasts and blogs. They're trying to do electronic media. But the only people that can vote for the Hall of Fame are baseball writers? I'm sorry. That doesn't make sense. And I love the writers. I'm not trying to get them taken away. I'm saying add the electronic vote. If you add the electronic vote, which means baseball broadcasters that have either been an official or any kind of an official accredited situation for, you want to say, 10 years, 15 years, whatever the number, Barry Bonds would be in the Hall of Fame.
So really, is that big of a difference for a guy who knowingly...
I think it's a liberal vote. I think that's the reason. So, again, we're not talking about should he. I'm talking about will he. The only way he gets in is if the Hall of Fame, as the entity known as the museum, the museum is not a subsidiary of baseball. So baseball doesn't govern this. And as long as this voting process stays as antiquated as it is, he has no shot.
Seth Everett, let's talk about the weekend and the ceremony with Willie Mays. I have no problem with that. It's great. I had friends who went up there. Barry entertained the fans of San Francisco, was the reason they built that ballpark. I think he deserves all those accolades from the home fans.
I didn't mind it. People in San Francisco, there's one thing, though, that I just want the group in San Francisco to acknowledge, and that is that they're completely biased when it comes to him. As long as you will tell me that you have unconditional love for him because he was wearing your uniform, you have no quarrel with him. You have no problem because he was on your team. And if he was a member of the Los Angeles Dodgers, you'd want him thrown in jail.
Who was
just
more...
admit that. That's all I ask. Just admit that that's true. Because when I was covering the steroid stuff, it was the entire country wanted him banned for life, except for San Francisco.
I agree with you. I was living there, as you know, for that, and it was very unique. Who is more misunderstood and more disliked as a baseball player, Bonds or A-Rod?
It's very, very different. There are a lot of people that like A-Rod. I just think A-Rod's a phony. Bonds was mean. A-Rod was never mean. You know, A-Rod and I had fights, but those were fights. Like, he was never mean just for the sake of it, or at least he never was to me. Bonds and I had very little to deal with, but, you know, I had heard the horror story, so I just distanced myself. I was never interested in him. There was one incident in Wrigley Field where we were supposed to get him on, and it was supposed to be a recorded mini disc. You know, remember mini disc?
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be a mini disc interview, and our producer left the mini disc in the booth at Wrigley Field. And Barry Bonds waited. And I was amazed. Barry Bonds waited with Brian McRae. He waited for them to get a mini disc to him so he could do this interview for MLB Radio. It was one of the strangest visuals I'd ever seen, because I would have figured Bonds would have taken off. But he's an interesting dude. I think that's not part of it, though, because I think that a lot of people, you know, try to take some kind of a stand. And, you know, you started to see guys get into the Hall of Fame that had had all kinds of rumors. And why? Because Barry Bonds got his drugs from a lab that got pinched? That's why we're having this conversation? Like, that's, to me, that's the inconsistency here. And he played in the era. He played in the steroid era. His story is always going to be about 1998 and McGuire Sosa and his jealousy. And that's what led him to doing it, and he did it. And we all know he did it, but the fact of the matter is that he still hit the ball over the fence. And we can debate what is performance-enhancing. Is blood spinning performance-enhancing? The reason why anabolic steroids are banned is because they're not healthy for you. But unless you're a member of my family or a dear friend of mine, I don't care if you do anabolic steroids. JT, you and I know each other for 20 years, but I don't know your producer from a hole in the wall. And if all of a sudden I found out he was doing anabolic steroids and he gets testicular cancer, I'm very sorry to hear that, but I don't know him. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know Barry Bonds. I don't care if he did steroids.
Finally, I know you're in Seattle. Who do you think comes out, Seattle or the A's? Who's more well-positioned to come through? Because I'm telling you, I'm a Yankee fan, as you know, and both those teams, especially the A's, are breathing down my neck.
Well, you know, right now, you know, the game yesterday was a microcosm of the flaws of both teams. Like, the A's' strength is their bullpen, and yet their bullpen gave up 4 runs in the 9th inning. Seattle, they've got to figure out what they have with Felix, and they've got to make sure Paxton is right. Paxton, I believe, pitches tonight, and that's something that's important for them because without him, the Mariners are screwed. Don't forget, the Mariners won in the first half 25 one-run games, and their run differential was under. And for a team with that great a record to be that under doesn't make any sense.
Great to talk to you. Have a great time in Seattle, my friend.
You got it, JT. Good to talk to you, man.
Good to talk to you, Seth Everett. Very deep conversation about his opinions on performance-enhancing drugs and the bond ceremony. The bond ceremony is big because in order for – and Pete Rose went about this. When Pete went to all these ceremonies along the way, it was supposed to win over – and Pete won't admit to this because he doesn't have to because Pete is an icon, but it was there to help Pete eventually win people over, right? Some of these younger riders might help Pete along the way. It's the same thing with Bonds. Bonds has to put himself in a position every time we see him on television over the next couple of years where people are sympathetic to him. A-Rod does it every Sunday night on Sunday Night Baseball. A-Rod's been a pretty good broadcaster. He's helping himself long-term. We've been telling you about PTs and what they're doing for fantasy football. Their fantasy football breakdown, they have 4 different tiers. The first down is for $50. two Budweisers or two Bud Light pitchers, and your choice of three flatbreads. The third down is $150. A case of Budweiser or Bud Light, a Bud Light Sylvanir cooler, large appetizer platter, feeds 10 to 15. And how about this, Bobby, for the touchdown? We got to get the touchdown in studio. A case of Bud or Bud Light and bottle, Jameson, Patron, or Deep Eddy, Bud Light Sylvanir cooler, medium appetizer platter, and their large platter. Who's hungry? Raise your hand. It's happy hour right here in 8 minutes. 24 of the signature chicken wings with your choice of sauce, 12 chicken fingers, 4 pub burgers, 6 chicken parm sliders, 6 mozzarella sticks, and so much more. That's what they're doing. Plus, a free draft kit and Wi-Fi. Perfect Wi-Fi throughout all their properties. Thanks to Seth Everett. Thanks to Joe Lisi and Vinny Bonsignore. That's what we do. It's a fast-paced local hour, but we tie it into the national topics. Coming up, the stinking genius, three-time world champion, Super Bowl champ, Mark Schlereth. He'll join me. Bill Platsky will check in. Former rules official, Mike Pereira. Busy show lined up here with Looney at the top of the hour. I'm heading off at the end of the week to L.A. Raiders at the Rams at the Coliseum. Remember, all those games locally on Fox 5 here in Vegas. For Bobby, I'm JT. We always appreciate you listening. Find me on Twitter at JT the Brick.